So what went down in the Bahamas yesterday? That's what the golf world wants to know after the meeting between representatives for the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia and player directors for the PGA Tour, along with the commish, Jay Monahan. Any progress on this deal between PIF and the PGA Tour? We're going to break it down. Inside the Ropes, world number one, Scottie Scheffler's been putting on a show the last 2 weeks, winning the Arnold Palmer Invitational and the Players back-to-back weeks. He's as hot as they come, but his Masters odds, they are crazy short. Some might call them Tiger-esque. We'll have more. And so far in the Florida swing, it's been the Bear Trap, Arnie's Place, Pete Dye's design, and now the Snake Pit. We're teeing you up for the final leg of the Florida swing at the Valspar Championship as golf today is now underway.
Golf today.
The PGA Tour's month-long residency in the Sunshine State coming to a close this week with the Valspar Championship. They have been pinballing around the state of Florida, all kicked off on the Atlantic side with the Cognizant Classic, then to Central Florida at Bay Hill. Of course, last week, the PGA Tour's flagship event with the Players, and now what might be the toughest test, or this in Bay Hill, maybe 1A, 1B, as we're at Innisbrook Resort on the famed Copperhead layout in Palm Harbor, Florida. Hey there, welcome into this one-hour edition of Golf Today. I'm George Savarikas with Eamon Lynch. But before we turn our focus to this week's event, we got to kick off with the big meeting that happened in the Bahamas. It wasn't exactly a fishing trip. They did play a little golf, though, with the Public Investment Fund Chief Governor Yasser Al-Rumayyan going down to meet with PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan and the player directors. Big picture for the game of golf. Is this a positive or a negative?
I suppose it depends what angle you come from it. For fans who consider it a moral issue with the Saudis, it's never going to be seen as a positive. For players and people within the game who see this strictly in commercial terms, they're probably leaning towards the positive on that. But so much depends on what the terms of any future discussions are going to be on. And I think we're still a long way from that. I'm actually just amazed more information hasn't come out about it yet, because you know what PGA Tour players are like. They're about as tight-lipped as town criers, George. But eventually it's going to come out in some sense of what the meeting was, not necessarily the particulars of the discussion, but at least a sense of how the players reacted to the PIF representatives in the room and what they think the issues might be going forward. They're going to have a better idea of what the goals are on the other side and whether that's reconcilable with what the intent is on the PGA Tour players' side.
We're going to dig into this a lot more during this hour-long edition of Golf Today. Let's get you to the details of what exactly transpired. It was members of the PGA Tour Enterprises Board, including player director Tiger Woods. They were on hand in Bahamas on Monday for what was, for many of them, the first in-person meeting with PIF Chief Governor Yasser Al-Rumayyan. By Monday evening, Monahan had updated PGA Tour members via memo, saying that he and the six player directors, which is Woods, Patrick Cantlay, Webb Simpson, Adam Scott, Jordan Spieth, and Peter Malnati, did indeed visit with Al-Rumayyan on Monday. The memo continued to say the conversation throughout was constructive and represents an important part of our due diligence process in selecting potential investors for PGA Tour Enterprises. This mirrors the approach we employed earlier this year as we evaluated an investment offer from the Strategic Sports Group. During the session, Yasser had a chance to introduce himself to our player directors and talk through his vision, priorities, and motivations for investing in professional golf. As we continue these discussions with the PIF, we will keep you updated as much as possible, but please understand that we need to maintain our position of not conducting negotiations in public. To that end, we will provide no further comment to the media at this time. Here Kay Dixon, who is on site this week at Innisbrook Resort for the Valspar Championship. Kira, you had a chance to catch up with the players. What are the general sentiments about Monday's meeting in the Bahamas?
Well, George, there are several player directors in the field this week at the Valspar Championship that were able to make the trip to the Bahamas and then up here to the Tampa, Florida area. I was able to speak with one of the player directors that was in the meeting, and he said that, first of all, it was nice to just demystify who Yasser Al-Rumayyan is, the chief governor of the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. And, you know, this has been a figure that they've mostly just seen pictures and videos of. So to get into the actual room, put a face to the name, humanize everything was very much important for them. He also said that, you know, Yasser came into this meeting with his ideas of where professional golf should go. And of course, the PGA Tour side and the players have their ideas of where professional golf should go. And he said that, you know, they're pretty far away from actually coming to a place where they're going to make steps to unification together, but that it was very much a positive meeting and that the relationship is, quote, very open from here on out. I was also able to catch up with a few players that were not in the meeting to see what their reaction was to the news of the meeting taking place.
Yeah, I wasn't too privy of everything that was going on. This morning I read some articles about how they met, and yeah, I mean, I think they're moving along is what it sounds like, and, you know, I'm glad all the guys were able to make it. I know some guys were playing this week that had to go down to Bahamas, but, you know, I think it's in negotiations, it's good for all our directors or player directors at least to show up in good faith for some sort of agreement. So I'm sure they're going to try and iron something out. I have no clue as to what it would look like, but talks are ongoing.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you're not privy to the discussion firsthand, but what would be your hope of what comes from this initial meeting?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure some sort of unification. I'm sure that's sort of the biggest topic of bringing the game back together. I have no idea how that would look like, especially just with, you know, you think big picture. You have a lot of rookies coming up on tour here, making names and stories for themselves, and then you got to bring in some of the familiar faces that we've seen for many years. So I haven't really put a whole lot of thought honestly into that whole on how that would look, but you know, with Fenway in and our directors and our team here, I'm sure they can put their minds together and get something done.
I thought it was about time, you know, as a PAC member and was on the board, was on the ballot for PAC chair. One of the first things I said was, I think we need to talk to Yasser here and see what his intentions are. What are his visions with professional golf? Clearly he's got the financial backing to make serious moves, and they have. And as the, you know, my concern is for the integrity of the PGA Tour, the future of the PGA Tour, and it's something that's been my dream for 40 years, since I was 5 years old, to be out here and to compete against the best, to play the historic venues, and to win trophies that have real meaning to them. So as long as we keep that integrity as priority number one, we'll see what happens.
I have not spoken with anyone yet, but I think it was good. Listen, I've said my, you know, what I've thought of the guys that have gone over and the way they, you know, they left and I would say somewhat trashed the PGA Tour, and that was my main issue, my biggest issue. I think you can go back and look at all my comments over the last couple of years. I've never had any issues with PIF or Saudis. So I've always felt that I thought a deal would come. I thought it would be, you know, maybe 5 years from the start. You know, we're 2.5 years from that now, or 2 years in. I thought it would be a little bit further down the road. But I think looking at the game of golf and as a golf fan, in which I love the game of golf and I love watching it, I think I'm like golf fans. I'm tired of all this bickering back and forth. You know, somehow we got to figure out how to get rid of that, whether, you know, we have a truce and they do their thing, we do our thing, or whether we come together, you know, as one entity. So I think you've seen what the Saudis do in other sports, and I think, listen, they're going to be a power throughout this world for many years to come, for decades to come, because of the money that they have. So I think if there was a deal that was in favor, or player directors were in favor of, and Jay and the board were in favor of, I think that'd be really good. But we have to see how it plays out. But I think it's a good first step to at least have our player directors talk to Yasser, see what they want, see what his intentions is, and then they can figure something out. And then having with SSG, you know, a part of the PGA Tour, Arthur Blank, John Henry, two great people, many other people involved in that group, they're going to make sure that the PGA Tour is protected as well.
So, guys, of course, plenty of strong opinions in the room in the Bahamas, but also still plenty of strong opinions just here out on the range on the PGA Tour. When you start talking about things like signature events, what are we doing about cuts? What are we doing about limited fields, guaranteed money? Are the live players going to come back to the PGA Tour? Those are the questions that a lot of folks out here are asking and want answers to. And it almost seems like there's a bit of fatigue and perhaps some resignation when it comes to answering all those questions and waiting for what happens next. So perhaps this meeting in the Bahamas is rounding the corner towards getting some of those answers.
All righty, Kira, at least a kickoff point for a lot of these people involved to have a face-to-face conversation. And let's continue the convo with Golf Channel senior writer Rex Hoggard. Rex, now that they had this introductory meeting for a lot of the stakeholders, what's next?
I think the next step is obviously going to be you get further down the line in the negotiations. And I like the way Eamon started this conversation. And you talk about it strictly in commercial terms. And that's kind of where we are right now. It seems to me they can come up with a deal that would include PIF and PGA Tour Enterprises because the market has already been set. The deal with SSG, it gave the PGA Tour Enterprises a valuation. It gave everyone an idea of what a minority investment would look like. In the case of SSG, that was $1.5 billion in initial investment. Those are pretty easy to start with. You can sit down and start having conversations. I think what happened yesterday was the next logical step. As Kira just pointed out, this isn't just about the numbers. This isn't a normal merger that you would have between companies trying to come up with some sort of multi-billion dollar deal. You have hurt feelings. You have players on both sides that have strong feelings on this. How do those players who join LIV Golf, how are they welcomed back to the PGA Tour? How does Team Golf fit into all of this? I think yesterday is a really, really good first step in that conversation, and it probably gives the player directors a really a better idea where PIF and Yasir are coming from.
Is it fair to say, Rex, at this stage, that one of the many unknowns in all of this is the internal tour politics? Because on one side, you've got the PGA Tour guys versus the LIV guys. That's the obvious one. But you have PGA Tour players, the elite players, kind of against the rank and file at the moment as well. You have what seems some weeks all of the members against the executive side of the PGA Tour as well. There seems to be a lot of bruised feelings, a lot of bruised egos that are still very much in play in this conversation.
I think PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan is going to come up with a T-shirt that says not going to negotiate in public based on how many times he has said it over the last few weeks. And I certainly understand where he's coming from. It's a very, very difficult process, and you're not going to be able to do that if you're constantly battling headlines. However, to your point, it's a member organization with 250-plus members. They all have opinions. They all have ideas. And you're right. The internal politics are going to come into play in this. You're not going to be able to negotiate in public, but you're also not going to be able to negotiate this in a vacuum because everyone is ultimately going to want their voices heard. And as we've seen, as we continue to see, those voices keep getting louder and louder as we seem to get closer to some sort of deal with the PIF. I was texting back and forth with a player this morning, and his first comment was, a deal is good for all. And I think that's where a lot of players are starting to land. But this player was also quick to point out that four of the top 10 players on Sunday at the Players' Championship went head-to-head at the Tour's flagship event on a really, really difficult golf course all the way down to the 72nd hole. That's a really good product. And this player's take was, yeah, I'd like to see a deal, but the PGA Tour product is still strong with or without those players who join LIV Golf.
But Rex, the player says that the ratings for the players were down by a sizable amount. Every event since the American Express, the ratings have been down so far this season. So while players tout what was the theater of the 50th edition of the Players, which we agree was a great watch, the market reaction to it has been some general malaise compared to where ratings were a year ago.
It is a problem, and I think that's probably the bigger problem going forward for the PGA Tour. Wherever it is they land with PIF and PGA Tour Enterprises and whatever the product is going to look like, I think the bigger issue is going to be bringing those fans back who have clearly become disenfranchised with the idea that players are just chasing money and that we end up with a situation where the game is fractured and we have people asking us as journalists, which one should I watch? Which product on a Sunday afternoon is the better product? I don't think anybody appreciates that, at least not from the fan perspective. We pointed this out time and time again. A fractured game's not good for most of the players involved. It's not good for the media partners, but most importantly, it's not good for the fans. And I think that's the backlash, and that'll be the challenge that the PGA Tour is going to have to overcome.
Yeah, certainly the case. He is Rex Hoggard. Eamon, we've been kicking around just amongst ourselves. Say that this is a step toward some type of unification, reconciliation, however you want to phrase it. At what point could golf fans forecast in the future that we could have some equilibrium where whatever the new normal is, that's where we're at?
Not anytime soon, because it's a long road to get there. And I traded messages last night with someone who was intimately familiar with what was going on in the Bahamas yesterday, and the response I got was partly sunny with scattered but significant clouds, which would suggest that the player directors and the PGA Tour people in the room thought there's something to potentially work with, but there are immense hurdles between now and then. And that's before you even get into the idea of a deal being reached over these thorny issues. And Rex highlighted some of those thorny issues there, and you can't really underestimate them. I mean, you're going to talk about the fate of live players. Do they have to earn their status back? Are they back by right? That's a huge issue in the locker room on the PGA Tour. You talked about the robustness of the PGA Tour product right now. That's an issue with all of the tour's media partners. There are tournaments and sponsors that are feeling squeezed as well. There are an immense number of issues that they have to work through that aren't really core to any kind of financial terms with the Saudis at all. If you figure that, as Jay Monahan told the board recently, that it would be end of year as a target for a deal with PIF, you're probably looking at a year by their own estimate of DOJ scrutiny of that. So by the time you actually see in practical terms what that deal looks like, optimistically, you're looking at Q4 of 26, more likely, I would suggest, into the 27 season. Now, what kind of détente is reached between now and then is another matter, but in terms of what the longer term future of this game looks like, that's still probably a couple of years away.
More concerned by just the current status of the negotiation, where it seems almost advantageous for PIF to extend this horizon, mm-hmm. given what the PGA Tour is facing in this kind of short term run to kick off the season, or the internal seemingly strife between the rank and file on the PGA Tour with the top 20 players and just how disjointed the messaging has been so far.
Yeah, there's no sense of urgency on either side right now, but you can tell from some of that player reaction, there's no great urgency on the PGA Tour player side either. They don't want to do a deal so badly that they do a bad deal. And that's what a lot of them think happened on June 6th. And I don't think they're in any rush to do that right now. So it's going to play out. It's going to take time, but no one's in a particular hurry to do anything right now.
Giving us a lot to talk about, though, because I'd be surprised if it's before the end of the year. Just, and this is an educated guess based on the timeline so far and what they still have to decide going forward.
A long way to roll in this story, George. But Scottie Scheffler, he's still polishing his trophy from the Players on Sunday. The odds makers are already looking ahead to the Masters, and we haven't seen a favourite price like this in over a decade, and we all know who that was. We'll be right back.
All right, how about these Masters odds? This is from DraftKings for the outright winner, Scottie Scheffler, plus 450. Extremely short. He is 4.5 to 1, a far and away outright favourite. Rory McIlroy at 10 to 1, and then the reigning Masters champ, John Rahm, is at 11 to 1. How about Brooks Koepka, who was runner-up last year, is at 20 to 1. So, Eamon, when you take a look at these odds, what do you think of where Scotty's priced?
Probably fair, given that we keep hearing about how statistically he is so dominant out there. But were the, you know, the greens at Bay Hill, the greens at TPC Sawgrass, they're kind of like the SATs. The greens at Augusta National, that's like your doctoral dissertation that you're doing right there. And that's a real test for Scottie Scheffler. He's passed that test before. He putted really well in 2022 when he won the Masters by 3 strokes out there, despite that 4-putt on the last green that week. Who else are we going to look at this stage? I'm sure Brooks Koepka is probably sitting at home in Florida watching this thinking 20-1 is an insult. And that'll kind of G him up a little bit.
I was thinking that was great value if you're seeing Brooks at 20-1, who was runner-up a year ago and also won the PGA last year.
And another guy I saw in there at 20 plus 2,200, Will Zalatoris. I think that's actually a really good bet for Augusta as well. I mean, Will Zalatoris has finished second at that tournament before. He's finally physically healthy, starting to get his game and his confidence back over the last few weeks.
Seeing John Rahm at 11-1, that makes sense, defending champion. Brooks at 20-1, it seems like, especially last year going into the Masters, the LIV guys were grossly undervalued because of the competition concerns and what the guys were playing in their schedule coming up to major season. Clearly had no impact whatsoever with some of the top high-profile names, at least with Brooks Koepka being runner-up.
Well, there were 18 of them in the field. Only 2 of them really made a noise, and both of whom had... This is an interesting one with that argument, George, because this is the golf course where they all have institutional knowledge, particularly Phil Mickelson. Brooks had been in contention there before. It'll be an interesting scenario if any of those guys, if that competitive argument kicks in. They will play the week before the Masters, but a lot of those guys don't have the depth of knowledge of Augusta National's twists and turns the way a lot of the other top players do.
Going to give you something, and this is for the last 5 Masters champs, and I was digging into this. What type of trends or form do you need coming into Augusta? So we start 2019 with Tiger Woods. He had 2 top 10s, his previous 3 starts in the PGA Tour leading into the Masters. He had a T5 as his last one. Then he went on to win. 2020, a little bit of an odd year because it was in November with Dustin Johnson. He had 3 PGA Tour wins from June to September, carrying in that form into the Masters, and then went on to win. Hideki was the outlier. His best finish was only a T15. Hadn't really done anything in 2021, and then he won. 22, Scottie Scheffler, 3 wins, and then wins the Masters. 23, Jon Rahm, 3 wins, and then wins the Masters. So 3 of the last 4 years, guys had 3 PGA Tour wins the previous, call it, 3 to 4 months going into winning the Masters.
You're saying it's not looking good for Rory McIlroy of Augusta.
So you would like to see at least some form, because Matsuyama's the only outlier who didn't even have contend in an event, didn't have a top 10. So you would want to see Rory or someone else have a run of a couple starts where they look good. Rory might only have 1 start left until the Masters. So if you're looking at recent history, then it's hard not to lean that, okay, Scottie Scheffler is going to carry this right into Augusta.
And we have to assume that Scottie Scheffler's confidence probably isn't going to diminish much between now and the 11th of April when he tees off in that first round. Other people are in a desperate need to build some confidence between now and then. We can also probably assume Scottie Scheffler's tee to green game isn't going to diminish at any point all the way up to the end of the Masters. The question for a lot of these guys always comes on the greens at Augusta National. Do they have the confidence there when it matters? That's going to be a great test for Scotty, but it's a great test for a lot of those guys who are contending this year.
Yeah, another man who's full of confidence is the one that Scotty Scheffler put the green jacket on last year, Jon Rahm. Remember what he was able to do on that Sunday. They had to play a lot of golf, close out the 3rd round as well as the 4th round. Jon Rahm able to win his 2nd major. Final margin was by 4 over Brooks Koepka and a hard-charging Phil Mickelson. So the Masters Club dinner, and here's the menu. Got to dust off the fact that I'm a Spanish minor. We got the Ibericos is one of the appetizers, tapas y pintos, the first course, ensalada de tanguro, and then the main course, the choice of chuletón a la perillo or rodaballo al pupil. Pretty traditional Spanish menu.
It looks fantastic. I think a lot of those old veteran champions are just going to say, bring me a burger and fries, but I would eat that.
Stay with us. We've got some tips to help your game. Golf Pass coach Natalie Sheehan joins us with the biggest keys, worst faults, and tips needed to improve at every stage of your swing. And Natalie Sheehan joins us now on Golf Today. Natalie, how are you?
Great. How are you guys?
Doing great up here. So, Natalie, say I'm John Q. Public, 18 handicapper, battle a big banana ball off the tee. What are the biggest keys that golfers are going to learn from this guide to swing sequencing?
Yeah, so no matter what the issue is that you're having in your swing, we run through everything from setup to takeaway to top of backswing, downswing, follow through, all of the most important pieces of your golf swing to help you work a little closer to neutral. There's no one size fits all when it comes to the golf swing, but this definitely gives you a guide as to how to get a little bit closer to neutral, which I believe will help most golfers.
Natalie, there's no one size fits all, but is there one aspect of sequencing that you think recreational golfers tend to get wrong most often?
I definitely think tempo can be a big issue, but even just nailing down your setup can be so helpful. If you're having an issue with the club face, that can cause so many problems with your contact and your consistency, which all golfers want more of. So starting from setup, making sure that grip is good to help get that club face maybe in a better position can definitely help you hit better shots.
If you could break down just how the guide is separated into driver and irons.
Yeah, so I don't believe that the driver and iron swings are different, but they do have different feels and thoughts. And so that's why we've separated the two in this golfer's guide, just to give you some ideas of how to set up maybe a little bit differently with driver and what are some drills and feelings that you would have with driver versus iron to help you hit your best shots.
Is there any particular tour player who you think is the kind of paragon of the perfect swing sequencing that you think players could learn from watching?
You know, that's a tough question to answer because, again, I don't think that there's one size fits all, but I love to look at a swing like Lydia Ko. I think a lot of the LPGA players have very sound golf swings. Technically, there aren't as many funky looking golf swings on the LPGA tour. So I love watching Lydia, love looking at Rory's swing, but I do think that looking at some of the LPGA players can be helpful if you're trying to get a little bit closer to a neutral swing.
All righty, Natalie, thanks so much for joining us here on Golf Today. Make sure to check it out on Golf Pass for our viewers at home. Minwoo hasn't missed a cut worldwide since the AT&T Byron Nelson. What was then the Byron Nelson, now the CJ Cup, that was last May on the PGA Tour, has made every cut worldwide since last June. Minwoo has been showing off his game, was runner-up at the Cognizant Classic at the Palm Beaches. Seems like he's getting close to getting that first win on the PGA Tour, Eamon.
Fourth straight week on the Florida swing. Hasn't been too sharp since the Cognizant Classic, tied 44th at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Didn't crack the top 50 at Sawgrass, but we saw some magic at him in Australia in the fall. You know, he was third in the Australian Open. He won the Australian PGA Championship. So he's definitely in that category of guys you're expecting to make a big statement one of these days on the PGA Tour.
Also won the highly coveted Macau Open on the Asian Tour, was 30 under that week. So he had two wins in the span of basically a month or so.
Anyone who can concentrate long enough in Macau to actually play golf, I admire. I've been there. I know what that scene is like.
Hopefully he won at the tables as well, and not just inside the ropes that week. The strength of the field for the Valspar Championship. Xander Schauffele, the headliner, who was runner-up with the Players, was the 54-hole leader. You have three top 10 finishers. Two joining Schauffele are Brian Harman, also was T2, and Maverick McNealy, who was on that first page of the leaderboard, past champs in the field. Taylor Moore, defending champion. Sam Burns, who won it back-to-back. Adam Hadwin and Jordan Spieth. So that is a perfect segue, as we're pleased to be joined by Valspar Championship Tournament Director Tracy West. And Tracy, what's in store for the 2024 edition of this event?
Well, what's in store is a terrific competition. The Copperhead course is in probably the best shape that I've seen it in 10 years. The rough is very long, very thick, small greens, firm and fast conditions. So it's going to be a great, great tournament.
Tracy, last year you had a difficult spot on the schedule. There were two signature events right in front of you. There was another one right behind you. Now the match play is gone, so you're coming off the back of these two signature events in front of you. Has that impacted how you've been able to draw a field this year versus last year?
Yeah, it really has. I mean, certainly, obviously, with them not having that, you know, the forced play last year, you know, of the Dell match play, it's been very helpful. We're extremely happy with our field, you know, the strength of field. We've got 16 out of the top 50 in the world, 44 out of the top 100. Fan favorites coming back. Certainly, you just named Jordan, obviously, Justin Thomas and so forth. But even, you know, some new guys. Xander Schauffele playing. He hasn't played here that often. We've got Cam Young playing here for the first time. Tony Finau's back. So it really did impact how we recruited and how the guys are setting their schedule. So we're thrilled with the strength of field we have this year.
What constitutes a good week for you then by the time we get to Sunday night, Tracy? Is it everything going smoothly logistically? Is it a dramatic finish with a great winner? Is it the community impact down the road? What is a win for you?
It's really all those things, right? I mean, certainly, you know, we want a great competition, and it starts off with weather. We are going to have great weather, except for Friday. It looks a little dicey, but hey, that's a, you know, a next number of days away, so hopefully that cooperates. But for us, in the end, it's great weather, so our patrons and sponsors that are here have a great time watching these guys compete. We're always happy with whoever wins, so that's fine with us. And then, in the end, it's the charitable dollars and the impact that we have. This tournament and Copperhead Charities, our host organization, we usually donate about $1.5 million to charity into the community. We passed the 50 million mark since 1977 last year, and we hope to do the same or more this year.
Tracy, the Tampa area has had this kind of sports renaissance with the success of the teams the past 3-4 years and the championships and everything that we've seen. How have you and the Valspar engaged the local community to kind of share in that success?
Yeah, we really do call ourselves Champa Bay, right? So it's not Tampa Bay, it's Champa Bay. And we have great relationships with all the teams, and we make sure that they come out and they're partners. So we've got all three teams here. They send out their mascots. We've got their guys playing in our celebrity pro-ams. Baker Mayfield was here yesterday playing in our pro-am. He's here today, not on site, but we have an off-site pro-am that he's playing in. So, and then it really starts with Rondé Barber, our general chair of the tournament, obviously beloved here in Tampa, and he's incredibly well respected and connected with all the pro athletes, the current and the retired guys that are in this area. So he brings them out. So the Lightning players come out. My gosh, we've got a ton of celebs coming out this weekend to watch, and every day, every hour, we're getting more texts saying, hey, I want to come out and watch. So we really try and engage the community and the sports teams in that way.
There aren't many women in your position, Tracy, of being tournament directors on the PGA Tour schedule. How did you find your way into this role?
Yeah, I was the first female tournament director on the PGA Tour, so very excited about that. I've been doing this for about 35 years. I really started as a volunteer, believe it or not, running media at the senior PGA Tour event in Grand Rapids, Michigan, back in 1990 and 91, and then started professionally in 92. Formed ProLink Sports with Hollis Kavner. He's our CEO, and he took me on when we started a senior tour event in Minnesota. And then we've grown our company since then. So I oversee this tournament. The Valspar Championship is tournament director, and then help oversee our staffs at the Wells Fargo Championship and 3M Open. So I've been doing it a long time, and I love it.
Well, Tracy, always good to visit with you. Having covered the Valspar Championship a few times, was always impressed by what it was like to experience in person and on site. So hopefully you dodge the weather on Friday, and you have a good week.
I hope so. So thank you, George. Thank you, Eamon.
Final stretch on golf today. This was the scene on Sunday at the Players. Xander Schauffele needing a birdie to force a playoff. Ultimately came up just short, finished T2. Today he spoke with our Keira K. Dixon on the week it was.
Yeah, it was another close call. Sometimes it's nice to just get back on the horse and get back to work. You know, if I was at home, I'd probably be thinking about it a little bit more, but here on property and just trying to get ready for another week.
X teeing it up again this week, and he's had a lot of top 10s this season. 7 starts, 5 top 10 finishes. See what he did on the West Coast with a T3 at the Amex, T4 at the Genesis, T9 at the Farmers Insurance Open, has 7 career PGA Tour victories, had 3 in that 2022 season, but the last one was the Genesis Scottish Open. What do you make of where Sanders at with this game?
I think that graphic we're just looking at kind of shows where he's at with his game. And he never seems to deviate from the quality of his play. He just doesn't seem to close out as often as you'd want to. I mean, this is a guy who's got 6 top 5 finishes, major championships, 11 top 10s, and I'm pretty sure he's now up to 16 top 10 finishes on tour since his last victory on the PGA Tour. And he did have that hot summer, 22. He won back-to-back at the Travelers Championship and the Genesis Scottish Open. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who should still be waiting for another trophy 18 months later. And I always wonder with a guy like Xander to what extent the confidence gets dented by a week like last week, because it's one thing if you put yourself in contention, you know, once a month and you come up short once in a while. Xander Schauffele puts himself there or thereabouts, it feels, week after week after week. And if you're not winning as much as your talent deserves and your positioning warrants, then it really does have to sort of blow the confidence a certain bit.
It's like the quote, like, you either die early and you're the hero, or you stay alive long enough to ultimately be the villain. For Xander Schauffele, he was so underrated when he first came on the PGA Tour. It was kind of unheralded. He hadn't really done much. Then he is able to play his way through qualifying, finishes T5 at the U.S. Open at Erin Hills. That's the first time a lot of people are hearing about him on the PGA Tour. Wins at Greenbrier, wins the Tour Championship, has a 2-win season his rookie year, and he goes from an under-the-radar guy to immediately in the radar, contending in majors. He's been around there so much. Gold medal winner, has 7 PGA Tour wins at just the age of 30. Now we expect so much from him because he's always top 5 or top 10 in the world, and we want to see him take that jump to top 3 and have one of those monster seasons where he's around PGA Tour Player of the Year. But if you look at it big picture, he's just 30 years old. He already has 7 wins. Mm-hmm. He's kind of on a pace for, if he wins a major, to a borderline Hall of Fame career.
When you look at those recent results, plus the Players' Championship, that's a pretty good return on his earliest days now with Chris Como as his new swing coach. So he's trending in the right direction.
For sure. He should take a ton of positives from what he did at TPC Sawgrass. For Eamon Lynch, I'm George Savarikas. Thank you for watching Golf Today with us.